It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As communities across Wisconsin grapple with pollution from toxic PFAS chemicals, new federal study finds close to half of the country's tap water may be contaminated with harmful forever chemicals. Call in along the way. Your questions and comments are welcome at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sydney Evans is senior science analyst at the Environmental Working Group. That's a nonprofit focused on issues relating to the environment. Sydney, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's unpack the new research from the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey, finding at least 45% of U.S. tap water contains some type of harmful forever chemicals. What are your major takeaways from this federal research?
This is something that EWG has been working on for a long time, and it's really great to see a study like this just happen and then also get so much attention as well and get so much, you know, of public interest, because there were samples taken across the country trying to figure out where this PFAS pollution is. It's something that EWG has been saying for a long time, likely impacts tens to hundreds of millions of people, because once these chemicals are in the environment, they're fully synthetic, they basically never break down, hence the name forever chemicals, and they're toxic at really, really low concentrations over time.
USGS finding PFAS concentrations similar between public water systems and private wells. What does that indicate?
That just goes to show how widespread this issue is. I mean, when you look at tap water contaminants across the country, which is basically what I specialize in, a lot of times you see different signatures, right? The either groundwater or surface water, private wells, they've all kind of got their own issues. But it just goes to show how ubiquitous and pervasive it is that these chemicals are popping up everywhere, because once they're in the environment, they just tend to spread around.
What did the USGS find from wells sampled in Wisconsin?
So there was only a handful of samples. I dug into the data a little bit. It looks like it was mostly focused on the kind of western border, likely to reflect, you know, they were just getting a sample from across the United States and Wisconsin as well. They were trying to get something representative of the overall population with a, you know, relatively small number of samples, considering the number of private wells and utilities across the country. But it aligns pretty well, because EWG has also put out some work, right? So we have done some testing across the country, pretty limited, but we've also maintained a map of all of the public data of PFAS that's been put out there. There's a handful concentrated in Wisconsin. And then we also have an industrial map that just kind of goes to show all of the blanks. I think that's the biggest takeaway from this, is that the USGS study and estimate was very valuable, but it's still an estimate. What we're really looking forward to at EWG is the upcoming UCMR testing by EPA, which will get much larger numbers of samples across the country from basically all utilities serving more than 3,000 people, and then also a bunch of smaller utilities in more rural areas as well. And so that, I think, is what's ultimately going to highlight just how bad this pollution is.
Can you explain a little bit about what that means, UCMR, and how EPA will undertake such a process of testing?
Yeah, UCMR stands for the Unregulated Contaminant Monitoring Rule, because although we know that PFAS is toxic at low concentrations, there's a lot of studies that back that up. It is still unregulated in drinking water. There are quite a number of contaminants that are actually unregulated in drinking water, are present in drinking water, but known to cause health harms. And PFAS is one of those. Now, luckily, there is a proposed maximum contaminant level that is scheduled to be finalized sometime at the end of next year. But in the meantime, this is perfectly legal for PFAS to be in tap water. The utilities don't have to monitor for it. They don't have to treat for it. But UCMR and these programs, these unregulated contaminant monitoring rule testing programs, are so important for establishing these protections and regulations. That's what's really going to show how widespread the issue is and how badly this treatment and protection is needed.
I wonder, how would the Environmental Working Group, the EWG, characterize the federal government's response to PFAS contamination in drinking water so far? What would you say?
Sure, that's a good question, because I think slow would be the word that I would use, because PFAS has been a problem for decades. This is has not been a secret, maybe against the industry's wishes, but all the industries that use PFAS in their products and their industrial processes. But this has been an ongoing issue for actual decades. You know, these chemicals were originally developed and used in, I think, the 40s and 50s originally for things like making the nonstick coatings like Teflon or like Scotchgard. And they started popping up in water shortly after that. And it's just been this slow movement of, you know, groups like EWG and other advocacy groups trying to put this information out there and draw attention to how bad and how widespread this is. And it's just been really slow, but it is so exciting. I don't think I can really express how big of a moment it was when there was finally that proposed MCL, because the EPA has not regulated a new contaminant in drinking water for decades. Even though we have a lot of evidence that there are contaminants out there that are in drinking water and that cause health harms over time, there hasn't been a new regulation. So the fact that we're getting one and that we're getting a fairly stringent regulation for PFAS is a huge step in the right direction. It's certainly not the end. There's a lot more work to be done on PFAS, but it's, I guess,
a big
that
milestone.
Sums it up.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. So, well, I hear you saying the word slow. The EPA proposing the safety standard of 4 parts per trillion for 2 of the most widely studied types of PFAS chemicals in drinking water. And here in Wisconsin, some samples reached more than 40 times higher than that standard. When might the EPA's proposed standard be adopted?
That's the big question, right? So even though these standards are pretty low, it's 4 parts per trillion for those two. And then there's also a regulated group for a hazard index. But right now, that MCL is just proposed, and it's not scheduled to be finalized until, I think, September of next year. And then once that happens, right, that won't make a real impact on tap water for years to come, because all of this new treatment is going to have to be installed at systems across the country to get into compliance, all of the extra testing that's going to have to be done. It's going to take years. It's going to take years.
The Environmental Working Group's senior science analyst, Sydney Evans, with us is explaining this new research comparing home water filters, how they stand up to PFAS contamination in tap water. Call in at any point to ask a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The nonprofit Environmental Working Group, EWG, they test 10 different types of water filters to see how well they remove toxic PFAS chemicals. You can call in with a question about water filtration at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sydney Evans is a senior science analyst at the Environmental Working Group. So, Sydney, 10 different types of filters for the newest filter guide from EWG. They run from around $30 to nearly $350. Why test these particular filters?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we wanted to look at countertop pitcher filters specifically. We know that reverse osmosis systems are pretty much the best option for reducing PFAS in home tap water, but they're not accessible to everyone. They have to be plumbed in. They're very expensive. So looking at pitcher filters, we wanted to fill that gap. And including this, you know, we could only test so many filters. So we chose some big household name brands like Brita and Pure. But then we also wanted to look at some more like niche filters that had claims of specialized media or that had additional contaminant, you know, reduction claims. And so we came up with this 10 to really run the gamut of the cheapest, most widely available filters to some that were maybe a little more expensive, a little more niche, that had a chance to reduce some of these chemicals.
And so this is a category of gravity-based water filters. Can you explain the gravity and just kind of the filter approach here?
Yeah, so all of these were either pitchers or dispensers that sit on the countertop. So they have an upper reservoir that has a filter unit inserted into it. And as the water flows down, just through gravity, no pumps or anything crazy, into the bottom of the pitcher, it's going to be filtered. And then, of course, you can either open the little tab to dispense it or pour it out of the pitcher, and you have your filtered water.
Well, take us into your bench science. How did you carry out this experiment?
So we wanted to get a sense of how these filters were going to perform in real world conditions. We wanted to see how they stacked up when they were filtering water from a regular old home tap that was contaminated by PFAS. Because there's a lot of other things in tap water that can potentially impact the filter's efficacy, right? Like the water hardness, other contaminants present. So for each of these filters, we ran 10 gallons of that tap water through the filter to give it a chance to do its thing, maybe, start filling up the filter with contaminants because they're all trapped inside this filter, which is why it's so important to maintain them and change them out. And then after that, we took a sample of the unfiltered tap, filtered, well, one last gallon through all of the filters, and then took samples to compare, how much PFAS there was in all of the filtered samples versus the unfiltered tap to kind of come up with a percent reduction for the total PFAS.
And what type of range did you find in the results?
It was pretty wide, and honestly, I was very surprised at the results. I was thinking, these filters can only do so much. They're probably going to have fairly similar results, but there was a wide spread. I think it was anything from just 20% reduction all the way up to 100%, where we could not detect PFAS in the filtered samples.
What about filtering water multiple times? Some people use water that is has a filter through their fridge. Would you recommend then running it through one of these specialized filters that is going to really target PFAS?
That's a really good question. It's not something that we looked at for this study, but I would anticipate that, because there were in many of these filters, there was just a percent reduction, right? That maybe filtering it multiple times, could have some kind of impact. It could maybe reduce the concentrations a little bit more, but I really don't know. And frankly, it might be, that's why we wanted to put this guide out, is so that people don't have to worry about filtering their water multiple times. They just know which filters are going to be the best from the get-go.
When you think of that, the class of chemicals, I mean, PFAS, there are like what, 12,000 now types or around there. I mean, can a filter target and remove so many different chemicals?
Yeah, one of the biggest challenges with PFAS is that there's the estimated thousands of chemicals out there, and yet labs can only test for so many. I mean, the last time that EWG, I think, did a large panel of testing, we were talking about 70, 70,
Wow.
not 7,000, not 700, 70. But we expect that those are going to be at least a decent marker for overall PFAS, right? And just because there are 12,000 of these chemicals out there in the environment, it doesn't mean that they're all necessarily in your tap water. For example, in our tests, we had a panel to test for about 25 PFAS, and yet in the tap water, we only detected about 10 in the unfiltered tap water. So they're not always out there. And then we expect, because these class of chemicals are fairly similar, which makes them, they have similar properties, they have similar issues with the health risks and how long it, they can stay in the environment. But we expect that the treatment that is effective for, the detectable, the testable PFAS is also going to be fairly effective for the ones that we can't detect. Now, that's not to say we shouldn't stop trying. There definitely needs to be more development and more control on these chemicals. This is not the fix. This is the cleanup, right? We need to look at where the PFAS is coming from, how it's getting into the environment. But I would say that, this is the best option we have, and there's pretty good evidence for these filters that this is effective.
Sydney Evans with us, Senior Science Analyst at the Environmental Working Group. A line into the conversation, 800-642-1234. Sydney, a brand perhaps a lot of people know Brita pitcher filters. Your testing finds reduced just 66% of PFAS in water. Their elite filter reducing PFAS by just 22%. What factors then lead some filters to do better than others?
That's also a great question. I'm really glad we're getting to dig into some of the work behind this study. So some of these filters have, they're simple, just granular activated carbon. And then others have maybe more stages of filtration. They have different systems. For example, one of the other filters we tested is actually ion exchange. It's not granular activated carbon. And those, all of those technologies, different medias, kind of perfecting this over time. I wasn't sure if it was just a marketing claim or if there was actually going to be some difference. But our study shows that some of these, you know, the makeup of these filters does matter. It does impact how effective these filters are. For the Brita specifically, that was really surprising to me that the two filters, the Elite and the Standard, which is, to my knowledge, in the research that we did, it was supposed to be a matter of the lifetime of the filter. So the Elite was supposed to last longer than the Standard.
Okay.
But what we think happened with the Elite, since it was so much lower, was actually not an issue with the filter media, but actually a poor fit. Had some issues with the filters, you know, either being loose or popping out. So we think maybe some unfiltered water was leaking around the filter into the housing with the filtered water. So that just goes to show that more goes into it than just the filter media. You have to make sure that you're maintaining and setting up these filters properly.
Really quick, because we're out of time here. Is there a third party certification to look for to be assured these systems do what they advertise?
So there are for some contaminants, there are some standards. There's NSF and WQA. Those can both certify filters to actually stand up to the claims that they're making. But you got to be specific. You have to look at exactly what they're being certified for.
Sydney, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Sydney Evans is a senior science analyst at the Environmental Working Group, and we have a link to their study on water filters. You can find it at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.